Hump Day, yeah!
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I'm a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Mark. I am the Prepper Guy, and I'm going to do another podcast because that's what I do. So anyway, I know I'm pretty sporadic on my podcasting, and I come and go whenever, and I thought to myself I need to kind of be a little bit more active in this because it's become easier to do. My last episode, I want to apologize. In my anniversary episode 52, I was using my broadcast mic, which I like. It's very expensive, but I move around so much that it's picking up some noise, and I haven't been able to isolate that weird little sound, and I spent hours trying to edit it out. But there was still quite a bit of it in there, and so I wanted to apologize for that. So, and then I forgot to mention, I did put it in the show notes, and I did a little bit of a chat about it. But I wanted to thank the guys and gals over at True Prepper for putting me on the top 10 prepper podcaster list of theirs. And I was pretty happy about that because number one is Jack Spirko and the Survival Podcast, which I listen to a lot off and on. And it really did get me into podcasting mentally because I thought this is a really cool way of talking to people without being interrupted all the time and to get a message out. So I listen to him a lot and I still do, but he's heavy into permaculture now and a different type of, I'm not into that type of food gathering and subsistence lifestyle. Because I prep for really bad things when it comes to being a prepper. And so if it gets so bad that the power is out and shit has hit the fan, I don't think your homestead's going to be safe from looters, gangs, or government. Pretty much all the same in one when you say government. So I'm not one of them people that wants to be living in an area that's open, obviously, and not secluded because you got to be farming and therefore it requires sunshine and water and all these things and to grow food and then to harvest. So you, even though you have your bunker, I just listened to a book. Actually, it's the Lichen Fallout series by Mark Tufo, which is kind of an extension of the Zombie Fallout series. And the main character's just freaking hysterical. And if you haven't listened to on Audible or read the books by Mark Tufo, The Zombie Fallout and The Lichen Fallout, they are freaking great. I would recommend it. And as a prepper, you get a lot of information from it, even though they're surviving from zombies, which is kind of the same thing as, say, in Washington, D.C. You still learn a lot about traveling, hiking, packing, food acquisition, defense, all that, whether it's a zombie or a horde of normal crazy people that have become zombie-like because they can't think anymore. So they're good books, and that's it. I find some of the actual books written for preppers, by preppers, become a little preachy sometimes, where the fictional books are a little bit nicer because there's an actual story that goes along with it. But if you're paying attention and reading between the lines, you're picking up quite a bit of information as you go. Kind of like an old expression I heard one time where I think it's a Bible parable where the men on camels are riding and then in the middle of the night they see an angel and he says, "Stop, get off your camel and pick up all the stones you can find and before you proceed. And in the morning you will be happy and you will be sad." Well, so they did, because he's an angel. Why do you argue with an angel? And so the next morning they find that all the stones they had picked up were gems and diamonds and rubies. And so they were happy that they had picked up some, but they were really sad that they hadn't picked up more. And this is how it is kind of with information. it's a be happy, be sad thing, because you're happy you gathered a lot of information in the stuff you read and you hear on the news, and then you're sad that you didn't get more of it. But with a book, you can read it again. So that's a little off the subject, but the one thing in the Lycan fallout was there are four, you know, this is kind of in the future, but it's kind of medieval again, kind of like that movie Doomsday, which was awesome. And so they get under siege by werewolves, which could be anything. It could be a gang. It could be soldiers, whatever. And so they're not able to get to leave their fort or their city, which is walled and all that, to harvest their crops. Because if they go out, they'll be killed because there's, you know, thousands of bad guys out there. So this is why I'm not as into permaculture and gardening and farming, because when I look at prepping and end of the world crap, I look at it as the end of civilization. And so in the long run, maybe a few years after the crap has hit the fan, you might be able to start farming safely. There might be some rule of law reinforced, you know, kind of like in the Wild West. You know, there were sheriffs and marshals, and there was a certain amount of security in the fact that you could go out safely farm. And if somebody attacked you, you could call in the cavalry. Of course, you ended up dead, you know, but at least there was some repercussions of bad guys' actions. They got hung and strung up, which kind of helped keep them from doing it the next time. So in that immediate holy crap moment, when you realize that you have to retreat and go to your fallback position because things have gotten so bad, you're going to have to abandon your fields and your flocks and your everything that you count on for subsistence. Now, I'm not talking about the subsistence as a job, you know, because we go to work every day. That's our subsistence. We get a paycheck, and that's how we, you know, sustain our lives at this level. But when it all falls apart and you can't no longer go to work at the ranch or the farm because there's bad guys out there, then it affects you on a day-to-day level, because you can no longer go get your breakfast because it's out there and you're in here and you have your bunker and your retreat. And if you have a bunch of food stores, that's awesome. And you might be able to ride out a siege. But if they know you're there, they're still going to strip your land, kill all your cattle, take all your chickens and eggs and everything. And you're going to be stuck again with dehydrated food stuff. So it's another shit hit the fan moment for you, just in the middle of a shit hit the fan event. So I'm more of an isolationist. I'm more of a just it's me and mine, and I'm going to go hide under a rock during that week or two when there's just total chaos. But I will always keep everything that I rely upon, which is for food and water and shelter, very close to me. That way, even if I'm surrounded, all my stuff is also surrounded. So I have what I need. Now, that's not to say if I'm camped up in the mountains living in a cave and trapping and being quiet, that I might still be surrounded and then I can't go outside and hunt. But the odds of me being found out as a single person or a couple people living in a cave and camping and hiking and trapping in a small area, I'm not going to be seen as a big target, because they know there's as much shit to get from me as if they just go and move into their own cave, because all my food is out there. It's the wild food. It's the rabbits and the coyotes and the squirrels and whatever is out there to eat. And so attacking me is going to do no good, because I don't have a huge larder hidden in a bunker somewhere where they want to get at that. And then I have a big target basically on my forehead, because I have a perimeter, I have acreage, I have water, I have a system of surviving and helping my community that becomes a big target, because there's more assets in there, whereas I'm just a single asset and living off of my skills. So I'm no better than them. Why would they attack themselves just to steal the lighter out of their friend's pocket? You know, it does not make sense. So this is how I look at being prepared. And that doesn't mean that I can't move up to a bigger form of survival as time goes on, and there's some systems put in place to where even if it's just militias or a cavalry or a local marshal that is keeping the rules, and now there's a community and a tribe or whatever you want to call it that watch out for each other, because most of the sweeping gangs and looters and main population groups that have formed these things because they're hungry have kind of died off and settled down, and so it's no longer boiling over. It's gone back to a simmer. Then I can still take my skills and my knowledge and become part of my community again, where I live and own land and all that, and become a productive part of it. But it's that first initial boil over that you want to avoid. And so that's why I make myself a very small, meaningless target, because I bring nothing to the table for a group of 200, you know, looters or gangs or whatever they become, you know, like a Mad Max thing. It's just me. I have nothing. I have no more than the guy at the end of the line that's getting by day to day. So they're not going to focus their entire effort at me. If I get in their way, I could probably get killed and they'll still take my boots or something like that. But if you avoid them, then you're not the subject and the focus of their ire and their attention. So that is how I look at prepping, and I do get a lot of heat from the prepper community because I'm obviously just one voice in many, and it's easy to marginalize my way of looking at it. But if you see benefit in the things I talk about, then that might help you in some way of your life. So I'm thankful to be on that top 10 list. It was an honor to be sitting at number 10 with Jack Spirico being number 1. That is a pretty nice list. And so I wanted to thank them, and I didn't do that in my anniversary, which would have been a good time to do it. But I'm a scatterbrain, and like today, I just plugged in the microphone and the Tascam, and off I went. So with all that business and overview out of the way, what got me really thinking this morning was I watched the Economic Watchdog by Greg Hunter, and he's got videos, you know, in his own channel on YouTube, and he gets some really good guests, and he had Gregory Manarino, I can't pronounce the guy's name, but he's another economist, and they're just, you know, they're talking about the economy, because that's what this show is all about. And Manarino, oh, too many vowels in that name. We're talking about some of the things that are coming on in the economy and why we're being taken to war. And I wanted to kind of explain some of this because it's, you know, like the guy said, he goes, I'm not saying this will happen. He's just saying it can happen. And we need to understand when we're watching things on economics and how it moves through our lives. There's economic theory, and then there's laws. There, you know, it's just like Einstein's theory of relativity. It's not a law because it works most of the time, but there's still some times when that formula doesn't plug in and work. So as long as there's a flaw that can't be proven to be replicated over and over and over again, then it's a theory. It's a damn good theory, but it's not, you know, law. It's not the Einstein's law of relativity. And with economics, there's the same things. There's the Keynesian theory or model, they call it, but it's still a theory of economics. And a lot of politicians today and economists today use what they call Keynesian economics. And you've probably heard it in the news. And if you're kind of aware about the economy and how it works, then you've heard Keynesian, which is more of a debt based. It's like, let's borrow a lot of money, pump it into the environment, and then that will stimulate growth, kind of like, you know, adrenaline gets you running for a minute. But it has its drawbacks, just like adrenaline, because there's always a crash. But it's more of a fiat currency based economic theory. It's based on debt and borrowing and pumping up a bubble, basically, and then dumping it. But it's all done in a design to where they kind of look at it like you know, it's like magnetic rail. You know, one magnet pushes, the next one pulls, the next one pushes, the next one pulls. And in theory, so they're create a bubble, dump a bubble, create a bubble, and it's supposed to get some motion going. And that sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. And then there's Mies and Hayek, and there's more of a different theory on economics. And the problem with politicians and the world in which we live, they don't like the Mies and Hayek kind of theory on economics because it's more free market based. It's not a debt based thing. It's more of organic. It's like if you're on a desert island and you have a hammer, that's your economy. You can build only so much with that. You can only do so much with that. And that is what your economy is. If you're Robinson Crusoe and then Friday shows up and he has the ability to do other things and has a different tool, like Naked and Afraid, one person brings a hatchet, another person brings a paracord. Now your economy is those two things. And then organically it grows. So, you know, Friday is a blacksmith and you have a hammer. He can now maybe take that hammer, melt it down and create two tools. They can find minerals and smelt those into certain steels and alloys to where they can make a sword or a knife or a pair of pliers or nails. So now their economy organically starts to grow. And it only grows to that level because that is how economics really works in an economic law type way. You can only do, produce, make, and sell what you can. And therefore, that you're limited to those. Those are the laws of economics. Theories try to push those laws in other directions to stimulate growth. So these two guys were talking about it. And he goes, you know, if we continue on this model and follow the status quo, with this debt-based model, and that's why we're $20 trillion in debt as a nation. If we can stay on that course, we will be $40 trillion in debt by 2026, in 10 years, or maybe less because it's starting to exponentiate as things move along. He goes, which is fine, but he goes, you can't stay on that path because there's those laws we were talking about that will not allow it. Your credit card is tapped out. So we can only borrow so much money from China and these other nations. And if they don't grow, then they have no money to lend us. So it, by virtue of just physics and the laws of sustainability, it can't continue. It might, because economists for years, and especially the Fed and these world banks have pulled off some pretty freaking astounding magic. But you have to remember it's always magic. It's based on a theory that could or could not work out because it's not based on the laws that actually govern it. So if China can continue to prosper, well, then fine. But China's not going to continue to prosper and have that kind of money to lend us or to buy our bonds and our debt, basically. And even though it's all just paper transactions with zeros and shit on a computer, it's still real to a point. They have to be able to back that up and say, we can do that. So China has to be able to sell their goods around the world. Well, if our economy is kind of effed up, you know, that's like saying, it's like check kiting. I'm going to give you a check and then you're going to take that money, put it in your account, and then you're going to write me a check, and then I'll buy something, and then you buy something from me. It's all, eventually that check no longer has any value because it's pretty well been tapped out because it never existed in the first place. It was check kiting. That's why it's a federal offense. Only the government can do that shit. You got it? So China then has to go to India and these other places that have large economies to sell their goods and get things going. And, you know, China might wake up someday and realize, you know, we don't need customers because we have, you know, billions of people here that, you know, once we ignite that flame of consumerism in the economy, we can be self-sufficient, just like America was in, you know, after the industrial age. We were our best producers and we were our best consumers. And so we were almost like, you know, perpetual motion. we built the things, we got paid, and then we bought the things. Like Henry Ford said, he goes, I want to build a car economically enough or cheap enough to where my workers can afford to buy them, so I know I need to pay them more so they can buy my cars, because who the hell else is going to buy them? People with jobs. And he employed a lot of people. So he understood how that worked. And that's how America's economy worked for decades. We were our own customers. China hasn't figured that out because they got a lot of customers, but they're kind of half communist. And they, because of that socialist aspect for thousands of years, I mean, that's an old, you know, culture. They've been ruled by emperors and stuff. So there's no innovation coming from them because, I mean, let's look at it. If you live in a tribe, a small tribe of 100 people, and the chief is picked the chief because he's the biggest swinging, you know what, in the tribe. And then you're going to sit there and go, you know, these arrows are really great, but what if we found some metal and we actually forged them into like tips instead of rocks that break, even though they're extremely sharp? When they hit the wrong target, we're out of tip. If they were metal, they would be sharper and we could sharpen them and all that. And the chief might go, well, those arrows are built by my brother. Are you saying he's stupid? And so all of a sudden, you're no longer innovating things because you know that your innovations might offend the omnipotent ruler of your tribe. And so you just shut up. And over 1,000 years, like in China, it is really just shut off that genome in their mind to be innovative. So they need us. But once they figure out the error of their ways and they allow innovation and don't feel it as a threat to their leadership, then they'll do really good. And that's why socialism does not work, because you can't innovate past the scope of what your leaders are saying you can do. Why do we need more than one color of a car? Black is fine. Shut up. It happened to Hitler because he had two basically scientists developing the rocket engine. And the one guy was 5-10 years ahead of this other guy, but the other guy was Hitler's kind of buddy. So he allowed the other guy, his friend, to continue his development when the outsider of that circle of influence, the friend of the leader, said, we can do this quicker if you allow me to do this. And he's like, no. And that was that. And because of that one mistake that Hitler made, they were behind on, you know, having jet airplanes with the technology. And so their other guy that Hitler liked had good ideas, but his development and approach to it was slower, and we therefore got the upper hand on that one, and with rocket technology and all that, to where we were able to use a better technology faster. So this is how innovation works and an economy works, and there's certain laws that will always come into effect, and everything else is theory. So, you know, Greg Marinaro, Greg M., because the other guy is Greg Hunter, so it's Greg squared on this show that I'm watching. Greg M., with all the vowels in his name, was saying that it can't be sustained because of these laws of the economy. We can't sustain it. If we do, great, but then even on the flip side, if we do, we're going to have to purge something. So he's bringing out, you know, he's like saying, you know, the feds are manipulating these derivatives markets and gold prices and silver prices, but a derivative on gold is not actually a physical, tangible, touchable product. It's a piece of paper. It's a fiat currency, but it's a gold certificate. Well, you have a piece of paper that says you have some gold somewhere. Well, like the silver certificate dollars used to be, and now they're just Federal Reserve notes. So it's not worth anything. So basically, look at derivatives as a poster. It's not Rembrandt or Monet, actual painting. It's a poster. So it's not the real thing. And so they print these derivatives up, and they're kind of tied to the price of gold, but because there's so many derivatives out there, it actually changes the price of the real gold. So his big thing was, he goes, looking at it from his perspective as an economist and a trader that's actually pretty smart, he says you have to get away from this paper currency, whether it's derivatives or even money. He goes, Yeah, you need certain amounts of actual paper dollars to conduct your business day to day and pay your rent and your electric bill. But he goes, your investment should be in hard assets, which we, you know, all preppers talk about this. And so, but you and I can't go out and buy tons of gold and silver like governments can. It's nice to have some silver and, you know, a small amount of gold if you can get a good deal on it and it doesn't cost you, but you're better off with true hard assets on our level, tiny macro level of the economy. So, you know, even this guy who's probably got way more money than I'll even think about making in my life, you know, he paid off his house. He buys, you know, things that he needs. So I'm sure he's got cars that are functional that he likes, but he's paid for them. They are now an asset. So, you know, when you make things like I talked about in the last episode of building things, I'm building assets. I don't have to pay money to buy them because I know how to make them. So I can create my own assets. Just like if I were a gold miner, I could literally dig out that asset that so many people have killed for over the years. And there it is. I can produce it myself. Almost like Bitcoin. You can mine them. I don't understand Bitcoin, but they're becoming a little bit more stable now because they can't be regulated and monitored like regular money. So people are going to Bitcoin. I'm not saying go into Bitcoin, but, you know, look into it. But you can actually create them through the Bitcoin mining or whatever it's called, and to where you can actually create an asset through work, but it, still you have something that you can create. So his philosophy was, and that's why I was talking about permaculture and all that. If you're going to start being prepared, you need to refocus your investments and how you spend your money. Now, if you're like me, you kind of go from week to week and month to month. And even though we own our own business, it's still week to week and month to month and job to job. We don't have money just dripping all over the place to where we can just go, oh, here's just some money and spend it. No, we literally have to go out and earn the stuff to have it, you know, and it's predicated on the market. And getting back to this video on YouTube, like I said, it's Economic Watchdog, and his name is Greg Hunter, G-R-E-G Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R. And I would suggest looking it up and watching some of his videos because, you know, this one's titled Fed Deliberately Created Bubbles to Save Itself, which is kind of diabolical when he kind of explained it. But it's like there are predators out there that wear, you know, $10,000 suits that are still predators and want to suck your blood out like a vampire. They just dress a lot nicer and speak more eloquently. And we think, well, he can't be a bad guy. Yeah, they are, him and her, all these Federal Reserve people. So he was suggesting hard assets, and you kind of need to look at what those are in your life. You know, what would be hard assets? Maybe solar panels for your home, because that's going to be your retreat. If you have to fall back and you're surrounded, everything that's invaluable to you needs to be in your home. So solar powered. That runs your freezer, that keeps your meat fresh. Now, if all that fails, then you can take all that meat and thaw it and turn it into jerky and pemmican and eat it real quick. That's why they say eat the ice cream first because it's good and it's going to melt and you can't store it. So, eat your ice cream. But eventually, you know, that's a hard asset. Solar panels, self-sufficiency is hard assets. It might look like a little hobby of, oh, I'm into solar generators and solar power in my house or my shop or my camper is all run by solar. Great. Those are assets that are hard assets because you and I can't afford to buy that much gold. And in that real first boil over period of a shit hit the fan moment, you're not going to be out bartering gold and silver for stuff. You're going to be hiding. So these assets need to be something that is going to help you through that initial phase. Now, sure, if you have a pile of gold and silver buried somewhere and they burn your house down and all that, eventually, you know, a month, a week, a year later, when you go back, you can dig it up. And now there's a society running again to where you can say, hey, I need you to rebuild my house. And now there's, you know, there's builders again, you know, it may be a barter system, but they're still out there and they go, yeah, I can do that for, you know, 2 ounces of gold. And you're like, I got that. And then, you know, you go to the lumber guy, sawmill, whatever's happening then, and you trade some silver for some lumber. So it's a good asset to have. But for the immediate you and I people that don't have that kind of FU money, we need to focus more on things that will be of value. The one guy that survived the collapse in, I think it was in the Ukraine, I think his name is Slavo or whatever. He talks about if he would have had 1,000 BIC lighters, he would have been a rich man because those were highly sought after. One of the guys in the neighborhood that he knew had figured out how to refuel BIC lighters with, you know, his propane bottle. And so therefore he was able to trade, you know, I'll refill your 5 lighters for some antibiotics or for some medical attention or whatever. So that becomes the immediate economy for what you need right then. And so that hard asset of having maybe, you know, 10 or 15 filled propane bottles you have for your barbecue grill, they're, you know, I don't know what, 5 gallon, I guess. You know, have some of those. Now you have a hard asset. What do they cost you? If you got them laying around and you get them filled up, they're, you know, $20 a piece. That's an ounce of silver. How much more will that propane take you in a barter society? Gasoline, diesel is good for immediate barter. If you get the right containers to put it in that are airtight to where moisture can't get in there, and you put stable or some other kind of additive that'll keep it, it'll keep for 2-3 years. As long as you're not opening it and closing it all the time. So you have, you know, 10 gallons of gas that's sealed up really well and it's going to last a long time. You got a heck of a barter item. If you learn how to do distilling to where you can make moonshine or, you know, and high octane to where it can be used for medical reasons or recreational, then you have a hard asset. And the reason I got into this, thing on the economy. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a break here because I got to change the batteries in my Tascam and go to Doomsday Depot and then I'll come back and talk about this because I'll move more into the economics of it, which a lot of people are like, Mark, why are you talking about the economy and economics when you're a prepper? This is why, because everything affects you and the things that affect you will be what cause your life event, your Tiotwaki. So these things run by big, you know, Federal Reserve banks and world banks will affect you on a level that you will really be praying that you have enough skills and hard assets to survive just the initial boil over period, to hell with a year later, just that initial shock and awe of what could happen. Just like in 08, when the economy collapsed, people lost their homes, they lost their savings. They lost everything, some people. Some people were forced into the streets. They were homeless, living day to day, bankrupt. The society didn't collapse, but their world changed, and some of them, you know, died, committed suicide. And the only reason you wouldn't call it a life-ending event for the world is because it was just a few markets and areas to where even though you're living homeless and you're living under a freeway bridge, you could still stand there and panhandle because other people weren't affected. But what happens when that veneer of society vanishes and then you no longer can walk out from under the bridge, the freeway and panhandle because there's no cars on it. There's no trains coming by. There's people walking and they're as homeless and screwed as you. So that's the boil over effect that could really affect our entire economy, not just your personal job, but everyone. Then it becomes real, real quick. So stick around.
Our online store, DoomsdayDepot.com, that's Doomsday with a Z as in Zoom, lets you zoom into products selected by a prepper for preppers. Don't get lost looking for the supplies you need. Find them and great values too at our online store. And you can always learn more at theprepperguy.com too.
Okay, well, I should probably watch this video again before I go into it, but it's really just a lot of economic, oh my God, what, you know, blood shooting out of your eyes stuff. But if you listen to it 3 or 4 times, you start to grasp the underlying big picture. You know, you might not understand the words derivatives and bond markets and blah, 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 gold-backed securities and whatever the hell they're talking about. But the reality of it is still there's a big picture. And what he's saying is he's saying these people, the Federal Reserve and even the World Banks are greasing the wheels with our blood and our money to go to war again. And the reason they always take us to war is it's a great way to cover their tracks and to dump whatever that they have in their market. And he gives an example. He goes, you look at the trillions of dollars of toxic assets that were swept up by the Federal Reserve when in 08, you know, we had a stimulus package of what, $3 trillion. And that all got used to keep these banks propped up. Why? I have no idea, because they're just banks and they're just assholes. But the amount of money to sweep up these toxic assets wasn't to guarantee your savings, because that wouldn't have been that much money. It was to keep the bank afloat, because the bank had bought all these derivatives in the housing market and basically, you know, were like, help us out. And because they're all buddies and they're all sharks and they all swim in the same tank, that, you know, they did. What's happening now is, because there's a little bit of uptick in housing and stuff like that, to where these toxic assets are now becoming profitable again, the Federal Reserve is selling them, which would be fine. But is that money going to go back to the people that lost everything? No, it's going to go to line their pockets. So they built a bubble, they pumped it up, and now when it popped, they swept it all up into their umbrella with our tax dollars, as far as the, you know, it is our tax dollars, even though we'll never pay for this shit. It was still debt put on we the people, and we are accountable for it. And then now they're selling it, so they're dumping it to readjust their ledgers, not like business ledgers where they balance or the IRS comes and talks to you. No, theirs are like a whole different set of bookkeeping set up by Darth Vader and Satan, basically. But they're dumping them at a profit now, because they bought them at pennies on the dollar, and to save the banks. But the money's not going back into the investors that were the ones that lost their homes, lost their jobs, lost everything, committed suicide, and now are living under a bridge. No, it's going to pump up their side of the ledger with the Fed, so then they can turn around and do it again. So they're always basically sucking enough blood out of us as vampires to where we're almost dead, but we're not dead. And then they give us just enough food and sustenance to regain our blood levels and our health again, but we're still prisoners of the vampires. And then once the society of all their blood-sucking cattle that they have laying around are healthy enough, they turn around and suck all the blood out of us again, but they still don't kill us. And this blood-sucking is done in forms of bankruptcies, you know, bond markets, all this stuff, like the bailout, that was the bloodletting, basically. And now all these toxic assets are sitting there in the pasture like cattle. And now that they're profitable again, they will sell them and make a profit. And then they got all their blood back. So the big picture is that they always take us to war. And because our bond market is so effed up, and I don't understand it, but it does make sense when you watch this video and you try to understand what you're seeing on the news and all this, we're always taken back to war. Because what does war do? It's great for the economy as far as money. It's a great way, because once there's an war effort, then they'll sell war bonds, basically. That money infuses the bond market again. And it's just like a little squirt of gasoline in the carburetor to sputter down the road a little bit more. And they just keep doing it. And if you look at the history of even just America, we've been at war since day one. I mean, the Revolutionary War, which made sense. And then we went to war with France. And then we went to war with Spain. And then we went to war with Mexico. Then we went to war with ourselves. And then we went to war... World War One, World War Two, Korean War, Vietnam War, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Operation Iraqi Freedom. It's always, why are we always at war? We're actually, you and I are peaceful people. America has always been a group of peaceful people. Most societies on the planet would rather just live in peace and tend to their goats, their cattle, their sheep, their farms, their dairies, whatever it is, and just live in peace, have children, and freaking be happy. But no, you can't do that. So we've been at war for a long time, and it makes you wonder, but there's money in it. And now I don't understand how it works on an economic level with these people at that level, but obviously there's money in it because they're always taking us to war. I mean, the Rothschilds financed Hitler and financed us. So it's kind of like, hedging their bet one way or the other. But either way, at the end of the day, they just have a whole shit ton more of money. And you and I don't, and, people are dead, and we're at war, and we have enemies. So it's almost like in George Orwell's book, 1984, always in a state of war. And everything they tell you is wordsmithed, it's changed, it's semantics, it's whatever it's called in the book. But we're always at war with the North or the South or whatever the two enemies are in that book. It's been a long time since I've read it. But, there's these two great nations. And then when you say, well, they switch it and they go, well, now we're at war with, enemy A. If you turn around and go, well, weren't we just at war with enemy B? And they're like, no, you don't understand. See, and so they could literally say that the sky was not blue. And if you argued with them, then you were a fool. And if you were a fool loud enough, then you were disappeared. Kind of like what happens today. So they're gearing up, ratcheting it up to take us to war, which I don't understand, but the big players do. And unfortunately, us people that are the gears and the, not even the gears, because the gears are the big governments and stuff. We're just the lubrication. We're just the gas that gets sputtered through the piston, blown up and kicked out the exhaust. We're nothing to them. And they are that maniacal. I mean, if you look at history, yes, they are. And it's always been follow the money. And so we're being ready and geared up and primed for a big bloodletting again, for the vampires to replenish their, I don't even know what it is, because at that level, who the hell cares about a couple $100 million or $1 billion? They're talking trillions and probably quadrillions, but it's not the number, because the number, they just add another zero to it if they want to feel richer. It's about control of the world. It's the biggest king of the hill game ever. And they all play it, but they don't get all butthurt when they lose, because then some other big rich prick, and we're talking rich. I mean, these people are so rich, you don't even know their names. He's top of the hill, for recess. And yay, fucking Bob won. And then, then the next little round, someone else does. But they don't get all butthurt and get in a schoolyard fight. They're just like, oh, cool. That was, wow. I learned a lot from you. But they all want to be in control. And meanwhile, they are all jockeying amongst themselves to who can be the king of the hill the longest, because it's all about control and controlling you and I. Because you don't control the planet. It's just there. You can't dick with that. If it wants to, it'll just roll over and shake us all off. So it's what's on the planet. It's the resources that you can control. Water. Wars have been fought over water. Wars have been fought in this country over cattle, grazing rights, water rights, lumber rights. So it's all about who controls that. They don't care if you get the rights over the rancher down the street, because they still control you. So they control what's on the planet. And mostly that's you and I. And then there's the big game of, everything. So I guess it's like Monopoly. I mean, you can play it for 10 days, but eventually it all just is the same outcome. So I guess they get bored and then they go, oh, let's just go to war. That's kind of fun. Cause then we can kill a bunch of people we're not in control of. But we are. I mean, they're in control of China. They're in control of India. They're in control of America. They're in control of Mexico. They're in control of Russia. They're in control of all the BRICS nations and everything. We just don't know it. We're being played. We're puppets on the string. We as the United States, we as Russia, we as Australia, we're all being played. And even the politicians are too freaking self-absorbed and into power that they will let these real power brokers pull their strings, because they might be rich and they might be powerful, but they're not that rich and they're not that powerful. So everyone all the way up and down the spectrum are all jockeying for what? Power. You and I mean, you get that job promotion. It's like, Now you work for me, mofo. So it's no different, but at that level. And so you have to factor this in. They don't give a shit about you and me. And now they're taking us to war. And he said, this, not just the war itself might be an extinction level event because we could drop a bunch of nuclear bombs, but they won't let that happen because see, it's their yard. They don't want their planet all effed up. They just want the people gone. And then they'll start over again. You know, they nuke the whole planet and they're screwed too for years and years and years and years. Now that might not be a big deal. They lost Boardwalk. Oh, that's all right. I'll buy it back. So I don't know, but if you look at it, they're talking when it comes to the resources that are controlled by these people, which is your food, your water. You know, kings used to not let people hunt on their land, which it was all their land. So if you killed a deer and they caught you, they killed you. So it's control of that kind of stuff. So he's talking about an extinction level event because of the mechanisms of the economy and how it works, that there'll be a massive shortage of resources because there's still 6 or 7 billion people on the planet, no matter who's running it. And it requires a certain amount of resources on that real organic level to feed them. And no matter how you play with the money, how you play with the gold and the stock derivatives or the housing derivatives or the Federal Reserve or the interest rates or the inflation rates, does not matter. When it falls apart or they break it by intention or by oops, because their theory didn't work that one time, there are only so many resources for the human mouths to be fed, you know. It's just simply that way. You can't feed. If everyone became a hunter-gatherer, there's not enough deer, moose, bear, coyotes, rabbits to sustain 6 billion people long enough to get through it, that boil-over point. So how does all this, I mean, when you watch the video, you're just like, these guys are pricks. And they're like the evil parent that doesn't even live in your house, but wrecks your life and ruins every decision you make for no other reason than it's just because they're drunk that night and they want to piss you off. And you go, why? And they go, I don't know. It's just shut up. So that it's that bad. And so whatever they're doing, when you watch this video, you can see that it is happening. It has happened. And if you're smart enough to read between the lines and really dig down to just the simple level, that because it doesn't matter what theory of economics they use or what words they use, like derivatives and all that, because those words didn't exist 300 years ago, and yet they were playing these games. So the words have changed, but the reality of the game is they are in control of every aspect of your life, whether it's through a derivative or through the stocks or through hard assets or soft assets. They are in control of those things because we allow them to be. But as long as the fiat currency, what makes them billionaires and trillionaires, is still based on what they can do with that asset. Because they don't own all the land. They may control it, but you are on that land. And if you don't give it up to them, and you shoot them, then, well, that kind of changes their whole game plan, doesn't it? So they are in control by the strings that are consistent throughout time and history, not derivatives and all that, but the actual strings that yank our chains, basically, they're in control of those, but only because they have all of what they call the assets, the money, the derivatives. They're worth $1 trillion. Well, shit, then I guess if you want to do that, you can. Well, no, if it falls apart, then all of a sudden no one gives a shit about them and they go, I'll give you $100 zillion for your land. You're like, no, because it's not worth $100 zillion. Actually, it's not even worth what I paid for this property. Then it becomes an asset and that they can't buy because they've allowed the illusion to pop. And all of a sudden they're no longer behind the curtain. So they can offer you all the gold and silver for your daughter or your loved one. And you can go, no, they can't make you do it. unless they have all the soldiers and all that, which they do, because that is why I argue so much against a standing army. That is why the founder said no standing army. But hey, we've screwed that all up too, because if you don't believe in a standing army, you're just not patriotic. There they go pulling that chain again. And if you're not patriotic, well, you're just not American. Ron Paul is just not American. He's mayor of Crazy Town. Rand Paul's talking a little bit of crazy shit. And if we all believe it, then we've allowed our chain to be pulled. But they have control of the military. They have control of the banking. They have control of everything that affects your life. And if you won't sell it to them, they have control of the people with the biggest guns that will come and flat out take it. You don't even get a vote. If they want your land, they will take it. If they want your homestead, they will take it. If they want your hard assets, they will take it. And the bigger target you are, the easier it is for them to take it. So I don't know how you get out of this system other than by not playing. Don't show up to the game. And that's hard to do because we are controlled by certain rules and laws of economics. Like if you want to buy land, you have to pay for it. And if the money, the paper fiat money is how you do it, then you have to have a job. But do you have to get sucked in at the level that they tell you to get sucked in? Do you need gold and silver derivatives? No. If you want gold, buy an actual gold coin and then analyze it. What is that gold coin going to do for you when inflation is so freaking high that it's astronomical? Then all of a sudden you're talking to a guy and you go, this gold coin is worth your house. And he's like, no, I won't trade for 10 gold coins for my house and my property. Oh, well then he's not going to let go of his asset. It doesn't matter what you give him. So you have to kind of keep it all in perspective. What will it be worth in that shit time? Not a lot. You might be able to trade ammunition for food, because that's something people can use. I don't give a damn about your gold coin. If I have something and you really, really, really want it because you want it, I don't care about how many gold coins you give me, unless those gold coins translate to something to me to where I can go, oh, you're going to pay me really more than it's worth. And I just talked to a guy that will sell me his homestead, which is twice as big as mine, for half that. Then I'll take your gold and I'll go buy that one. And I'll keep half of it. So we have to think about our investments differently. So that's a little bit of a, kind of just a supporting tangent on how this kind of works. But, you know, things are only valuable because they're saying they're valuable. Who said gold is so damn awesome? It's just a mineral. There's 92 or whatever on the periodic table. What makes that one so valuable? Because all the people playing with it think it's cool. And they need a standard by which they can be judged and measured for their control and their success. It's economies were built on flowers. If you've seen that movie, Wall Street, with Michael Douglas, he talks about the orchid or the flower or whatever. Their whole economy was built on it because people thought it was just so damn beautiful until they didn't. And then that rich guy that had all the flowers was no longer rich. He just had a garden full of flowers. Big damn deal. And like Michael Douglas says in the movie Wall Street, that painting is valuable because someone paid that much for it. It's no different than any other painting, except that he was willing to pay $1 million for it. And therefore someone now wants to pay $1.5 million for it. But the reality is, it's just a painting. It's just gold. It's just silver. You can't eat it. So when you're looking at your portfolio and all that, don't have derivatives. Have real assets, things that you can touch. You know, you have a car. I have a picture of a Ferrari. I can't get in it and drive it. That's what a derivative is. Now, if I have a Ferrari in my garage and the keys in my pocket, I can get in it and drive it anytime I want. That's the difference between a derivative and a hard asset. Don't buy paper. And money is the same thing. Those dollar bills are only as valuable as what those people in control, the banks and the Fed, say it's worth. They say it's worth a dollar. Oh, okay. It's worth a dollar. Some farmer says, well, my milk is worth $2 for a gallon. Okay, we agree. But what would be the difference if I went to a farmer and said, I have this knife. What's it worth? I don't know. What's it worth to you? Well, I really need a knife like that. That's about the right size. I'll give you 10 gallons of milk. It's like, okay, cool. See, now it becomes value based on value. What do you think it's worth? What does the other part of the transaction think it's worth? And is it a fair exchange with both parties? Yeah. And that's all money is. It's just a barter currency to make things easier for you and I to buy milk. But they're playing with it. So all of a sudden, you've worked your ass off for 500 barter chits, and you were saving up to buy a laptop computer. And then they say, ah, we changed our mind. Those barter chips are only worth half as much. Oh, well, shit. Then I have to work another month to save another 500 barter chits to get that laptop. Well, that sucks. That's called inflation. Or you could look at it as someone just stole half of your assets because you had enough to exchange for that item. But because they said it's no longer worth that, didn't they, in a sense, take half of your money, your chits, in value? So there's no fair exchange anymore because you can't do an equal fair exchange with somebody. Like if I come to you and I say, I'll give you this cow for that, you know, 10 gallons of milk or gasoline or whatever I need. And you go, okay, fine. And then when we go to do the trade, I go, you know what? That cow is worth twice as much. Well, so is my gas. No, not according to the powers that be. So now you're going to have to fork up more gas or whatever. See, that you would kick somebody's ass for doing that to you. It'd be like, screw you, dude. My gas is worth what I say it's worth, and you say your cow's worth that much. Well, then I disagree. In fact, I met a guy yesterday that'll give me 2 cows for 5 gallons of gas, so go screw yourself. You can't do that in a fiat currency because it's all manipulated by who? Oh, them pricks at the Federal Reserve who don't care about you or me. They will let people jump out of buildings when they do their little tweaks with the economy, and all of a sudden the stock market crashes like it's done so many times in the past because of these pricks. Do you think they watch the news and see people jumping out of buildings, losing their homes, being evicted, becoming homeless, and go, well, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Look at all them people. I didn't have any idea that what I was doing affected that many people. Do you honestly think they give a shit about you and me? No. It's like dealing with a crazy sociopath that's going to literally pick you up and throw you off a building, him and his 10 minions. And you're like, what did I do to you? And you say, I just don't like the color of your hair. It's like, I'll shave it off. No, I really get a kick out of watching throw you off this building. And you're like, well, what can I do? It's like, nothing. It's like, I'll give you my house. I don't need it. I'll give you my dog. I'll give you my car. They're like, if I wanted it, I'd just take it. No, what I want to do is throw you off the building. They don't care that moment that you realize that you're in free fall and you're going to die and you have that feeling like in a dream. They don't give a shit how terrifying it is to you. There are consequences to their actions, or the consequences to you of their actions, are irrelevant. In fact, they're watching you as that oh shit moment hits you, that you're in free fall and you're going to die and you couldn't stop it. And now all of a sudden, all that anger toward that guy and all that is gone now because you're like, oh fuck. They get a kick out of that. They hope that you don't flip over before they see that in your eyes and your face that you're going to die. They literally freaking get a hard on over this crap. And do you think they're watching the news and think that they care that they're going to send all of our children and family members to war and watch them die because they got to reinflate some other part of their portfolio? No, they don't. They have proven it time and time again. We've seen the stock market crash and people die, go homeless, go broke, go bankrupt, lose everything. I mean, everything. Do they care that thousands and thousands of people lost all their homes in the savings and loan crash? No. Did they gather up all the assets and then sell them and then split them up among the people, or just go, your assets are overvalued because we did that to you? And so we're going to divvy up the money this way to where you're not totally screwed, you can have some of it? No, they didn't. They put it all in their pocket and walked away and watched people slit their wrists. This is how freaking evil the face is that you are looking at that controls your life. And if you're not prepared for that and you're part of the big game, maybe that's why God said be in the world but not of the world. Because if you're of it, they have total control over your actions, your life, your fortune, your family. Shit, they can control who your daughter marries. So understanding economics from a prepper's point of view, I would relate it to know thy enemy, which is pretty much the art of war and the simplest way to put it. We have enemies, they have goals, and their goals are not our goals, and our goals are not even in their equation. It's happening and you can see it. And if you just pay attention and don't get confused in the minutiae and semantics of what they're saying and just look at what they do, you can see it. I mean, if an invading army comes in and kills everyone in America, do you really care if they're from this planet or that planet or that country or this nation? Do you care what words they use for a gun? Do you care that they don't call bullets bullets? They call them flying projectiles or really fast rocks? No, you don't, because the actions are visible. The economy has been manipulated going back to King's Roman days. I don't matter how far back you go. I mean, Eric the Conqueror, you know, when he just basically stole all the monasteries of the area that he landed his ship in, threw all the monks probably off the towers, he set up commerce, shipping lanes, trade routes, money, and he was in control. Did he care about the monks spending 1,000 years to build that monastery with their own sweat and blood? No, just threw them out. Did he care that they were monks? Maybe they were good people? No, threw them out. So you can see what they've been doing, whatever the words were called back then or today. And so we know, as being prepared people, I hope that we all are, that there's a game afoot. I don't understand the rules. I don't understand the words. I don't understand the language of the rules. I don't even know the players. But because it's so abstract to me and because I can see the outcome of the game, I don't even want to be in the bleachers. Because part of the rules of the game is you just grab 20 people off the bleachers and kill them and then grab another 20. And oh, by the way, you can't leave once you're there. I think I'm just going to stay away. In fact, I'm going to run so freaking far away from the Colosseum that I'm not even going to be part of it. Even if you're giving me free bread, I'm just going to go. So you have to look at it that way. You have to look at it as that they're an enemy. Know your enemy. Don't know his name. Just know thy enemy. And then prepare for what could happen. Now, the beauty of this ginormous game they play is on our level, we're invisible. If you just get hard asses, don't make a big deal out of it. Just, you know, you get, you know, you pay for your old, you know, four-wheel drive that's EMP proof and you're happy. Yeah, keep new tires on it. Keep it running good. Learn how to work on it. That is an asset that is more valuable than whatever Bill Gates could buy when that day comes. Because you're not part of the game. It's just you. It's just me. I just want a good, reliable four-wheel drive. And since I have to buy one because I'm into four-wheel driving, maybe I should buy a pre-69 old Bronco or Ford or Chevy Blazer, which kicks ass, or a Toyota Land Cruiser, something that I can work on. It's EMP proof. It's reliable. It has a carburetor. I get it. I know how to set the points. Great. Does it run 0 to 60 in 3 seconds? Who gives a shit? I'm four-wheel driving. So that's an asset. It's always valuable. And you might someday, in a world without rule of law, meet some rancher that'll go, oh man, I would give you half my ranch for that Toyota Land Cruiser. That would make my life so much easier. And you're like, dude, we got to trade because I need food. I'm a meat eater. Let's do it. Bam. How much is that asset worth to you? When you can feed your family sustainably for a long time, what dollar amount is that to you? You build, like I build, a 72-inch belt grinder out of free shit. Doesn't really mean shit to me other than I know how to build it now. What is that asset to a person that's a blacksmith when there's without rule of law and the shit has hit the fan? And because it's solar powered and I know how to make it work on certain kinds of batteries and stuff to where one day a week he could run that thing and sharpen some shit. What's that worth to him now? That's worth quite a bit, really. It now has an amount or a worth that can't be dedicated to in dollars. He'd go, that would be great because, you know, we're going to be invaded next week and that I could get the sharpest shit going with that. We would have a decisive edge on them people. I will shit. You can come and live in my house forever. Keep that thing working. I'll feed you. Shit, marry my daughter. What's it worth? That hard asset. So they're talking about hard assets in this video with by Greg Hunter. And I'm really pushing it just so, you know, you can watch it and get as pissed off as I did listening to this guy that knows what he's talking about. And he runs his life a little differently than most traders on the stock exchange. I mean, he sweeps up all his assets at the end of every little transaction and goes out and buys a hard asset. So he's not hanging out there in the wind like most suckers that are going to be jumping off buildings when this shit happens. When you watch it and you're just like, how can I relate this bit of knowledge to my simple life, my simple little life? What can I do with this information? Well, it's a good warning. It's like somebody really smarter than me going, hey, don't go around the corner. And you're like, why? And he's like, and you don't understand him because he's speaking some other language, but you can tell by the outcome of everyone else that went around that corner that either died or came back bloodied and broke and crippled and ruined and raped and pillaged. It's like, you know, this warning, I think I'm going to heed it based on the history of going around that corner. So analyze your life. This is what I always tell you to do. What are your basic needs for survival? Not living in a cave and being, you know, like a monk. I mean, what do you really need in life? You need food, water, fire, shelter. At whatever level, that is what you need. You need your food, whether you get it from Walmart or Safeway or whatever. Whatever all those other stores are on the other side of the Mississippi that I don't know their names. Winn-Dixie and all that shit. Doesn't matter. You need water, wherever it comes from. Shelter, which is your house. However you acquire that. Build it yourself or you got a mortgage on it. Whatever. Food, water, fire. We got stoves for that shit. That's important. How does those things translate to your life? Well, you need a bigger shelter because you have 10 children. One of them has a medical issue. Two, hell. So you need to provide for that person a little bit at a different level than just the basic food, water, fire, shelter. You might need medication. Is there something you can do that if the world ended, that you could still take care of that child with special needs? I mean, other than love him, which is free, you know, is there a certain medication that maybe you could wean him off of because you quit listening to mindless fucking doctors and you find out you can actually, you know, a lot of these things are preventable and curable. I was watching something the other day where the guy hadn't been to a dentist in 40 years. He's got great teeth. You look at his teeth and they're straight. There's no cavities. He's not missing any. Doesn't go to the dentist. So obviously it's our lifestyle that's causing us to go to the dentist. I'm just saying, so if you have special needs people, what will you need to prepare for them? Is it a certain type of equipment that you can buy or make or have to where it becomes an asset? So instead of going and paying the doctor every month for this treatment, maybe you could actually buy that piece of equipment or build it or get 10 people together and do your own thing to where if shit hits the fan, now you have an asset. It's a freaking hard asset. Not saying build a hospital, but there's shit we can do. And so learning first aid and medical and nutrition is an asset. It's a skill and an asset that will pay off dividends that you cannot put a dollar amount on ever. Knowing how to build things, whether it's blacksmithing, woodworking, these are things. Artists were not needed in the advent of society the way it is now. You know, it's like, you talk to a mountain man like Jeremiah Johnson, you know, and you're like, hey, dude, I got this painting. He's like, what the hell do I need that for? What I need is a better coat and a blanket. That's what I need. Yeah, but dude, look how beautiful this picture is. That's great. I don't need it. So those are needs, and then there's wants, and then there's the reality of hard assets. And you, only you can bring this out. And I don't even know if I'm going to shorten this podcast. You know, you can break it up into parts and listen to it over time and whatever. And, you know, hopefully I've kept it simple enough to where it can be kind of evergreen. It's not pointing to any one thing, you know, because just to say they're gearing up for war now doesn't mean they didn't gear up for war 50 years ago. We've always been at war. So when I watched this video, I was like, holy shit, there's still some things left that I need to do. I'm prepared for a lot, but that's basic survival. Now I need to start preparing for after the boil over. What will make me, I don't mean wealthy in a controlled sense, like all these pricks we're talking about, but what would make my life better? Let's say it boils over and I lose everything, the house, the property gets burnt to the ground, gets looted, ransacked, and all that. When all that's over, what will be assets that I can use to totally rebuild and be a better situation? You know, I'll need lumber. I have a sawmill. I guess I need some more gas to where I could rebuild my life. So that's where I need to move my preps up to a different level. I don't need to become like the world's best gun shooter, you know, tactically trained for all this shit. That's good for about three or four days into this thing. And then if you're smart, you just go and hide. You know, hell, some of the meanest, evilest, wickedest predators on the planet, leopards, freaking baboons that have massive teeth, whatever the, pick a predator. You wouldn't really look at that predator as a sissy, would you? I mean, no. But if it's threatened in a position where it cannot win, because maybe it's two king of the jungle mountain lions or lions and 5,000 baboons. Who do you think's going to win? So the lion will probably retreat and lay low for a while. Does that make him a coward? No, it makes him smart. So it doesn't matter how good you are at being tactically trained, because that's only good for the immediate. I know how to shoot good enough to get out of town and to lay low. It's all I really want. I don't want to spend all my time and money on an asset that is not that valuable as learning to weld or to build. I don't care what they say. It does not matter. In this society, it might, because you can get a subcontracting job as an instructor with some crazy company. But when the shit hits the fan, your life expectancy of your trade and your profession and your hard assets is pretty damn short. Unless you're going to become a looter. So anyway, I hope you understand that that was all about prepping and being prepared and looking at what's going on around you, reading the writing on the wall and go, shit, they're going to take us to war. And that means something's about to change. Doesn't mean we're going to war. It means they're readjusting. It's time for the bloodletting to suck our blood again. If they take us to war, it means something is happening. Do we know what? No, because we're not those people. But something is happening, and odds are it's going to be pretty damn shitty. So what I'm going to do, I think I'm going to do in my next podcast on what would the world be like if, not like Barney, the purple dinosaur, if we all got along. You ever really thought about that? I mean, why are our enemies our enemies? And that relates to what we're talking about today. Why do we hate these people? Why do those people hate us? And what would the world be like if instead of fighting each other, we all worked together? I can guarantee you that if the United States, Russia, and China were not at each other's throat with all these political and monetary mind fuck games that they're doing, we would probably already have colonized Mars or whatever planets out there that would be cool to colonize if we were all working together instead of against each other. And that would be awesome. I think there's a Bible prophecy or thing that happened in the Bible, Bible story, that tells why that'll never happen. And it was called the Tower of Babel. So we will analyze that and maybe I'll forget all about it. Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, it's on this one, so you can always remind me, Mark, you were going to talk about it. What if we all got along like that stupid purple dinosaur? You guys have a great one. Thanks.
Well, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to this show. I hope I brought something to the table for you all. As always, go to prepperguy.com. read the show notes and run over to YouTube. Check out my channel every once in a while. I'll have a video out there, and sometimes I do the whole episode as a video. And then also, for all your prepper needs, go to doomsdaydepot.com. That's doomsdaydepot.com for any end-of-the-world supplies you may need. Other than that, I hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you later. As always, enjoy the apocalypse.